deal with people in justice, but they became rich and enjoyed life, etc., etc. And Ali himself had his discussion with Uthman beforehand, and he said, "You are appointing your relatives. See, Uthman, Muawiyah in Syria is behaving like a king." And when Uthman said him, "But Muawiyah was not appointed by me, he was appointed by Omar," he said, "Yes, but Muawiyah feared Omar more than Omar's servant feared him. But with you, Muawiyah is doing everything from behind your back. So you are not Omar, you are not as strong as Omar." But Uthman didn't. And so the first thing Ali considered doing is to remove all the governors and rulers who were appointed by Uthman. As a matter of fact, he was given advice by sincere friends of his. "Don't do that. Don't remove them. Keep them until they give their allegiance and there are no protesters and everything is settled, and then you remove them, because you are the caliph. They never gave you a bay'ah, a pledge yet, so you better wait until they do that." But he didn't, on a matter of principle. I wouldn't have blamed Uthman for them and then keeping them in their posts. Someone in particular advised him, "Keep Muawiyah, governor of Syria." And later on, when he gives the allegiance, then you will be in a position to remove him. But Ali was very obsessed by the question of principle, and so he tried to remove them. His two peers, Talha and Zubair, who were amongst the six, went to him and asked to be appointed one governor of Yemen and one governor of Kufa. But Ali said, "Had you not requested it, I might have considered it. But according to the Prophet's instructions, whoever wants a post and demands it should not be qualified to take it." And so these were two potential caliphs, and then they asked for a small governorate, and Ali refused them. When Ali sent a ruler to replace Muawiyah at Syria, he was intercepted and returned back to Ali. And this was the first slap on the face of the new administration, sending someone and returning him back, etc. And there was a contrast here between the Muawiyah was at a very privileged position. Ali was the new caliph, and the new caliph at a time of crisis when people were divided and chaotic. Muawiyah was ruler on Syria for more than 10 years. Omar appointed him and he stayed there all the time, and Uthman, of course, etc. Muawiyah was a very crafty man. One of his famous sayings, "If there was a hair, I hold one end and other people hold the other end, it will never break. If they pull, I relax. If they relax, I pull." And Muawiyah utilized his time in the very wealthy country of Syria to really buy the allegiance of the people. He gave, he spent. He gathered people around himself. And so he was their undisputed king, if you may. Ali was not in that position at all. So Muawiyah, being that confident about his position, didn't obey the caliph, did not yield the chair of Syria, and remained there. Would any caliph accept this? would any respectable head of state accept this? That he tries to fire one of his employees, and the employees say no, and sending him, challenging him, etc. So there was no place at all to consider, well, all right, I leave Muawiyah in his post. This wouldn't be, it would be inconceivable. So that sealed the fate of the events to come. Meanwhile, the two other peers, Talha and Zubair, who were not allowed to be governors over Yemen and the Kufa, went to Ali and took his permission to go to the Umrah. And Ali gave his permission. When they left for Mecca, they announced that they gave their pledge, but they were forced to do that by the force of the public opinion and people bringing them, etc. So they said, well, we gave our allegiance by force. And they spoke against Ali being lenient with the killers of Uthman, etc. And in Mecca they went no less than Sayyidah Aisha, the wife of the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. And somehow they convinced her to go in their company to Iraq, al-Mosul. And there they formed a big army. And that was another challenge for the administration. And so Ali had no option other than to go with them with an army. And there was that battle called the Battle of the Camel. Because Sayyidah Aisha, the wife of the Prophet, was almost the commander-in-chief of the battle, and she was on a camel in one of those little large boxes called howdaj that they put in camels and ladies used to be inside them. And during the battle, the stirrup, the leather band holding the howdaj to the camel, was cut, and the howdaj fell with Sayyidah Aisha in it. And so she was removed to safety in a house, actually captured. The battle went on, and Talha and Zubair were defeated and killed. So there was a large battle between two armies, unfortunately led by companions of the Prophet. Before the battle, there were very serious approaches to make peace and avoid battle. And Ali sent an emissary to speak on his behalf. And they almost agreed. And Ali, next morning, would go to tell them, well, you have agreed with my emissary, no need for bloodshed, etc. And here, the equivalent of the CIAs of the time, during the night, incited some of the ranks to go and kill people in Basra, a little raid on Basra. And immediately the atmosphere was electrified, because the rumor to the camp of Ali was that those people are killing our allies, and the rumor in the camp of the army of Aisha and Talha and Zubair was that Ali is not to trust. He sent people to raid our people. I remember a few years ago during the Eid prayer, when the Eid prayer was held, used to be held in the center, and thousands of people came, and a man was crossing the street, one of the Muslims, jaywalking. And the police arrested him. And there was about to be a massacre, because all the Muslims came and he said, Allahu Akbar, the enemies of Islam, etc., etc. And the others had their weapons. There was about to be a massacre. When people are in a large crowd, they are very liable to lose their brains. And it seems that We Muslims are blessed with that extreme emotionalism. You know, Salman Rushdie writes a book, there is a verdict on his life, but who was killed? 22 people in Pakistan, out of the riots, etc. So, and still, my slogan, after all my years, Muslim Ummah, think. It is a thinking crisis. Whether it be in Afghanistan or everywhere else, emotionalism. Emotion is okay, but emotionalism is our enemy. So there was emotionalism. And of course the armies met, and there was that regrettable battle in which 10,000 people were killed. Two armies led by Sahaba on both sides, and 10,000 Muslims were killed. After the battle, of course, Ali went to the house where Aisha was there, and he said, "Mother," you know, Aisha was Umm al-Mu'mineen, "Mother, may God forgive us and you." And he treated her very nicely. He ordered her safe home. He prepared a caravan for her, with a guard of 20 knights. And somehow later on, when Aisha was approaching home and really went home to Medina, she said two things. She said, "Oh, how come Ali puts me amongst 20 men?" And then the guards bared their head, and it proved to be all women. So that Ali made the arrangement that her guard would be camouflaged as knights, but were all women. And then Aisha said, "Indeed, I have no enmity for Ali, except the usual between the wife and the in-laws, her in-laws. And he's a good man." And Ali got the news of that. He said, "She spoke the truth." You remember when Hadith al-Ifq, when Aisha was accused in her honor, and the Prophet took the news. Do you know, anyone who doesn't know that story? Hadith al-Ifq? Okay. And Ali's advice to the Prophet was twofold. The women are plenty. You can choose another wife. But he also said, go and ask her servant, her maid, because her maid knows best. The maid was asked and gave a perfect testimony about Aisha. But since at the time Aisha had some discomfort, uncomfortable feeling about Ali, how come suggest to the Prophet to go and take another wife? And Ali said she spoke the truth. It was only a family feud, and she is the wife of your Prophet in this world and in the hereafter. So we have to respect her. After the battle, of course, all the people of Basra gave their allegiance. As he was leaving, the wife of Talha, one of the two leaders that was killed, stopped in his face and cursed him, and "May Allah make your children orphans and your wife a widow, etc., etc." And she really attacked him, and he was absolutely silent. And they came to him, "Prophet, shall we arrest her? Shall we remove her, etc.?" And he said, "We were ordered to respect women when they were mushriks. Now they are mu'mins, shall we not respect them?" It seems by a look at the Battle of the Camel that Sayyida Aisha shouldn't have succumbed to the temptation. I do not think it is, not only I, but the consensus is that she didn't make the right choice in going and joining the other army. And when the other army raised the cry that "We would like to avenge for Osman," etc., Aisha was not the nearest of kin to Osman. Talha and Zubair I think, were not right at all, claiming we gave our oath under compulsion, etc. And certainly it had to do with their denial of taking high posts that as they requested, etc. And the cry for avenging the blood of Osman, it is well established in the Islam that the one who take revenge is the government, is the official authority. Aliyev, of course, had nothing to do with the killing of Osman, and yet he faced the situation that dictated really what happened. Now the more major issue is the story between Ali and Muawiyah. Muawiyah settled himself and prepared himself for 10 years, and Ali did not have that opportunity. Muawiyah took the occasion, exploited the occasion in trying to brainwash the people. You know, people are easily brainwashed. But Ali was the perpetrator in the killing of Muawiyah. When Uthman died, Sayyidina Ila sent his shirt to Muawiyah with the blood on it, as well as her two fingers that were cut. She tried to defend Osman, and the sword fell on her hand and cut two fingers. And so Osman hanged that shirt on the podium, the minbar of the masjid in Damascus, as well as the two fingers of Sayyidina Ila, and incited people and really enthused them against Ali, etc., etc. Like what happens even in our countries. You know that the media can boggle the minds of the people, so it was charging the people against Ali all the time, and being nice to them, and paying them, etc. So he was in a good position strategically. And he decided to disobey Ali and to challenge him, even if it came to war. And he prepared a very large army. At that moment, somebody of his entourage went and whispered to him, "Muawiyah, your claim to avenge for the killing of Osman is illegal, illegitimate, because only this is in the hand of the authorities, of the caliph. And therefore, if you wanted to avenge for Osman, you have to be caliph. So it is not only the battle between you and Ali as a rebel governor, but you should claim yourself to be caliph." And he took the oath of allegiance from the people of Syria that this is the caliph, Amir al-Mu'mineen. So this was one step further. Amr ibn al-As is to be remembered, a Sahabi who opened Egypt in the first instance, and yet Uthman had ousted him, fired him from the government of Egypt. When Ali came, he appointed someone else, but it was not Amr ibn al-As, and so he went to Syria and joined Muawiyah. Ali sent a letter to Muawiyah telling him the Muhajirin, the Ansar, the people of all the regions of the empire have given their pledge, so I am calling upon you to give your pledge. Amr ibn al-As advised Muawiyah again to raise the shirt of Osman. By the way, the word "the shirt of Osman" had become a famous saying in Arabic jargon, Arabic literature. When you raise the slogan to your own means, you don't mean it at its face value, but you have your own agenda. Even currently we say the Palestinian issue is the shirt of Osman, because so many people made fortunes and etc. from it. And he officially announced that he denies to give his allegiance to Ali. Ali therefore had no choice but to go with an army in order to meet him, and he prepared an army and went. Ali sent a messenger to remind Muawiyah, remember Muawiyah, your life is going, your hereafter is coming, and don't be the one to spill the blood of the Muslims. But Muawiyah told him, you go and tell this to your friend, to Ali. Then the man told Muawiyah, you could have saved Uthman if you came on time to save him, but you didn't, and you have your own agenda. There was a period of emissaries and the mail going forth between the two people until the month of Muharram was up, and then there was battle. Ali advised his soldiers, if someone is wounded, don't go and kill him. If someone is fleeing, don't go after him. Don't uncover a body. Don't violate dead bodies. Don't violate women, even if they curse you and your honors and your fathers and mothers. And the war started. For a few days it was only individual, night to night, but then Ali took the whole of the army and met the armies of Muawiyah, and in 2 days it was quite obvious that the army of Muawiyah was being defeated and the army of Ali was victorious. And at this very last moment, something happened as if prearranged. All the personnel in the army of Muawiyah raised the Quran on their spears and said, we will arbitrate to the Book of God. And so the people in Ali's army refrained from attacking the Quran. Ali told them, I know those people. I know them as children, as know them as grown-ups. They are deceiving you. Yet there was that hesitancy in the army of Ali, and people came and told him they are asking to arbitrate to the Book of Allah. What's wrong in that? We cannot go and find and fight them while they are raising the Quran on the spears. And so Ali told them, well, I'll do that against my own judgment. And then it was decided that some kind of negotiations, and like any arbitration, Muawiyah would choose a representative and Ali would choose a representative. Muawiyah chose who? Amr ibn al-As. The people around Ali chose Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, and Ali warned them. Abu Musa is a great man, a very good man, but he's a simple man. He's not a match to Amr ibn al-As. But they insisted, and he told them, against my will, I'm going to do that. And the rest is history. The two arbitrators met and had several meetings, etc. And Amr ibn al-As could really influence Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. He said, well, there are two people. The fight is not a fight for Islam. They are both Muslims. The fight is for two persons. And maybe the Muslims will be better off if they found a caliph who is neither Ali nor Muawiyah. And it dawned upon the brain of Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. And when it was time for them to declare the result of the negotiations, Amr, being a very polite man, said, after you, sir. And Abu Dharr stood up and said, I remove my man like I remove this ring from my finger. Upon which Amr ibn al-As said, and I confirm my man as I put this ring into my finger. And this was the greatest tragedy of cheating in Islamic history. Ali said, but we did not authorize the negotiators to take such a decision. This is cheating. This is deceitful. Don't accept it. And he made his mind to not accept that, to resist that. But those around him, still there is a trait of this amongst even Muslims of today, split into various groups and opinions. Those who said, Ali, you are God. Those who said, Ali, you are the caliph and will fight with you. Others would say, we are tired. Others would say, Ali, how come you accept an arbitration in such a way? And to appoint arbitration is kufr. Because if you are the caliph and you accept arbitration in your caliphate, then you are unfit. You are baghi, and you ought to be killed. And so there was the khawarij. Khawarij means the plural of kharij. Kharij means one who goes out, one who goes away. Those were the khawarij who made the decision that al-hukmu lillah, the hukm, the ruling is to Allah only, and not to the human beings. Upon which Ali described that statement, a very noble statement for an ignoble cause. And the Khawarij went their way and declared Ali to be a kafir. And so, what would Ali do? He would decree, as long as they pray, we pray with them. We treat them like Muslims, our brothers. If they attack us, we'll defend ourselves. And that was about the Khawarij. And so the army of Ali almost disbanded because there were so divergence between its factions. And Ali went back to Kufa and Muawiyah went back to Damascus. And for a small period, there were practically two caliphates. The legitimate caliph, Ali ibn Abi Talib in Al-Kufa, and the other one, Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan in Damascus. Then, some of the Khawarij considered that now there is that division, two caliphates, separation of splitting of the Ummah, etc., etc. No. Neither Ali nor Muawiyah are good. And by association, Amr ibn al-As. And the three of them plotted to kill the three of them. And they said, we'll await them as they go to pray. And as they go in to pray, like Umar al-Khattab did, they would spring up and kill them. The one who was assigned to kill Ali was Abdullah ibn Muljam. The one who was assigned to kill Muawiyah was called Al-Barq ibn Abdullah. And the one who was to kill Amr ibn al-As was called Bakr al-Tamimi, Amr ibn Bakr al-Tamimi. Well, the one who went to kill Ali ibn Abi Talib killed him. The one who went to kill Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan could stab him only in his buttock, and he was saved. And since the time, of course, he had to pray in a special shielded place at the mosque and take special guard, etc. As to Amr ibn al-As, very typical of him, on that night he got diarrhea, and so he didn't go to the mosque and sent someone else, and that someone else was killed in his stead. The one who killed Ali was called Abdullah ibn Muljam, and he was arrested, and Ali said, if I die, kill him and only him. If I live, then leave the matter to me. And then Ali ibn Abi Talib died. Just before he died, his friends came to ask him, shall we give the pledge to Al-Hasan, his elder son? And Ali said, I don't order, I don't forbid. So it's entirely up to you. And the people went and gave their pledge to Al-Hasan. Al-Hasan carried the legacy of his father with the divided army, etc., etc. And there were negotiations between Al-Hasan and the Muawiyah, because Al-Hasan discovered the fact that any other alternative is better than half the Ummah fighting its other half. Any other alternative, whatever it is, would be better than the Muslims fighting one another. This I see now in Afghanistan. Any other alternative would be better than fighting one another. But Al-Hasan was in a position to act upon that. Ali was never in a position to do that. He was caliph, and someone became a rebel and didn't obey orders. If you are a caliph that respects himself, Muawiyah should have seen that. Muawiyah should have foretold that if there is a battle between the Muslims, that would be a dagger in the heart of Islam for the end of time. And he was in a position to say, all right. Ali was not. He couldn't. Al-Hasan found himself in a position to yield. And so there was an agreement with Muawiyah that Al-Hasan would give the pledge to Muawiyah. And this happened, and the Muslims became one Ummah again, and one empire again, one nation again. But there was an addendum to the agreement. It was agreed that Al-Hasan would acknowledge Muawiyah, and that after Muawiyah, Al-Hasan would be the caliph. Very reasonable and very fair to both parties. As a matter of fact, Al-Hussein, the brother of Hasan, went to him and said, don't accept that, we have to fight. And just like a typical elder brother, my brother is not here, Al-Hasan told him, I know better than you. And he made peace, and he fulfilled the prophecy of one of the hadiths of Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, this son of mine, Al-Hasan, is a Sayyid, a master, and Allah through him will make peace between two great factions of Muslims. What happened after that? Muawiyah colluded to kill Al-Hasan by poisoning. He could buy the allegiance of the wife of Al-Hasan for a very large sum of money and for a promise that he would marry her, his son Yazid. And so she kept putting the poison until he died. Muawiyah sent the money and sent a letter, I wouldn't feel safe for my son to be with you. Then things happened after that. Now Al-Hasan was out of the way. Muawiyah now became the king, undisputed. And so he had visions that the one to come after him would be his own son, Yazid. And so with golden sword, he forced the notables to come and give their allegiance to Yazid as crown prince. This was absolutely unknown in Islam. It is not an inheritance, it is not a legacy. But as one of the poets there said an Arabic thing that with people coming in and you would say, your caliph is this. If he dies, it is this. If you say no, it is this. and he would draw the sword up. And that was how Muawiyah did the unprecedented thing of making it an official inherited kingdom, which annoyed all the people, but some of them in particular declared themselves rebels and went to odds and gathered around Al-Husayn, who of course wouldn't give the allegiance to Yazid. And this led to the clash between Al-Husayn and Yazid. And the people of Iraq promised Al-Husayn to be his supporters. And on his way to them, they betrayed him. And he gave his followers the choice of leaving him, because there was a huge army sent to fight him by Yazid. And the people around Hassan went except for 70 people. 70 people to fight more than 100,000 people. On military grounds, the policy would be to withdraw. But sometimes you pay your life to get something you want. And the Battle of Karbala was there, and Al-Husayn was killed, and his head was chopped off and carried to Yazid, and Ahlul Bayt were taken as captives to Yazid, etc. But the blood of Al-Husayn was the first nail in the coffin of the Umayyad dynasty. And this ends the legend of Ali ibn Abi Talib, Al-Khulafa al-Rashidun. Next lecture would be my final, and it is a general commentary on what we said in the previous lectures. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.